Welcome back to the couch, everybody. Welcome into an NBA potluck. Yes, a potluck. Do you remember, back in the day, you were playing youth sports, maybe baseball? For me, it was football. You show up to the field on a random weeknight, and all the parents bring food. You bring a couple sides. Someone brings dessert. Somebody brings, wings. We got barbecue. That's what we're doing, but we're doing it with the NBA, Max. We've each brought two side dishes and one main dish of NBA storylines. We're excited to hop into it. Just about 3 weeks away from the NBA playoffs. How you feeling?
Pretty good. That was a weird way to start what a potluck is, starting by playing youth sports. I feel
that's how I know what a potluck is.
It's very white of you. I feel like it was more of like a neighborhood block party type situation, or just
Never.
regular barbecue type situation. I guess I don't necessarily know the definition of the potluck, although I am the one that did come up with this category or this exercise here, so I probably should have known what a potluck is. But yeah, I'm really excited. The way it works, we're each gonna bring two side dishes. These are some smaller stories that we're not gonna spend a ton of time on, and then we both have our main course. Our big, I guess, what would the main course be for you, food wise?
Oh, food wise, I don't know, maybe like some pulled pork or something.
Yeah, that's a great one. That's perfect. I was gonna say a turkey, which is not right. Don't do that.
That's
Don't bring that to a
Thanksgiving.
potluck. No one wants you there. I still can't think of a big one, even though I am the fattest one on the pod. I should be able to think of a food dish off the top, but I can't. Anyways, these main dishes are the ones that we're going to be going a little bit more in depth in. And I think we're going to save those for later, Jordan. Let's start with those side dishes. What's your first one here?
My first side dish. So this is actually, I just posted a TikTok video on this, and it is Zachary Risacher and the progress that he's made this year. And I think what he's done to completely vindicate being the number one overall pick. Remember on draft night, there was a lot of skepticism about Risacher. Was there any upside there? Could he ever be a star? Could he ever carry a team? All this type of stuff. Like, is this really the guy that you want to take at number one? And I think, even though there isn't this superstar upside still there with him, I think he's done enough to prove that he is going to be a very, very good player. Post All-Star break, he's played in 19 games. He's averaged 15 points, 49.5% from the field, and the big one is 41.1% from three after a really rough start to the season where he shot 30% in November and 29.5% in December from three. So the fact that the shots are going in, it looks a lot prettier now for Risacher. And I think you can just see that he is, he's athletic. He moves really well without the ball. He's a perfect complement next to a great playmaker and ball handler like Trey. I think he's going to be an awesome player.
Absolutely. I'm really happy to hear this because I texted you and we were texting back and forth. Early in the season, we were talking about how great Risacher was looking as that first overall pick. I think he went a little under the radar here. And watching him play, it's very evident that he's just one of those guys that knows how to play basketball really well. He's always in the right spot. He's always sort of making the right decisions. The issue with him, as you alluded to, is that shot-making ability, right? He has not been consistently shooting the basketball well. Although the thing that I love about him and kind of the thing that really got me intrigued by him watching him so early was that he was at least taking those shots and he was in the right spot. And with young guys, sometimes those lights are a little bit too bright. You're the number one overall pick. That comes with a little bit more media scrutiny than other picks. And for him, I don't feel like I've seen him in a position. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say after the various injuries that the Hawks have suffered that I've been watching a ton of Atlanta, but I haven't really seen him in the games that I've watched get those big eyes that rookies get and get kind of scared. Now, I'm sure if you're watching every single Hawks game, maybe you're seeing those moments. But for me, I really like what this guy is. He's very confident. Once he grows into his frame, he's 6'8". He's only 200 pounds. He's 19 years old. He's going to grow. He's going to bulk up. That's just what happens. You don't have to ask me twice about that. And I think it's just going to be something where his frame is going to get a little bit more NBA ready and he's going to be able to attack the rim more viciously. And if he can add a consistent jumper, which he's starting to do, this guy's going to be really good. And if you're looking at the draft picks here in the first round from last year's draft, I mean, Alex Sarr goes to, I think we both have, how are your feelings on Sarr? I don't think we've ever really talked about him. We both have kind of questions about him. How are you feeling about Sarr?
Yeah, I mean, he's made really nice strides here as of late as well. So I think, a good pick by the Wizards there and still has a ton of upside. But I think Risacher has been better for sure.
Absolutely. And I think people see you as a second pick and you're like, all right, well, this is going to be the number one guy option, number one leading option, whatever. I don't see him as that at all. I see him as a defensive anchor guy with high upside, where he can shoot the basketball. Hopefully one day they're projecting that forward. He has a interesting passing ability I've noticed from him. He's got great handling for his size. Watching him run the fast break as the ball handler is always very interesting. You look at number three, Reed Sheppard. He doesn't play. Steph Castle's been awesome. Ron Holland's been awesome. I know you and I both love Ron Holland. He's won, I think, fights per game. He's about 1.5 fights per game right now, which is pretty good. Salon just isn't really getting a ton of play. Klingon has his issues. Dillingham doesn't get a ton of play. And then Edie and Cody Williams. Like, Puzelis was a good pick for the Bulls, but like you're looking at this top 11 here. I mean, Richesse is one of the best ones out of those top 11. People can argue, with Steph or Puzelis, but I think if I'm the Hawks, I'm happy that I took Richesse, and I've been feeling really good about what his production looks like so far this year.
Yeah, specifically for the Hawks too. I mean, he is the perfect guy to put next to Trae Young with how he moves without the ball, with how effective he is in transition. I don't know if you can find a whole bunch of guys who just simply run harder in transition, possession after possession, than Zach Risacher. Like it is him busting his ass every time down the floor and beating people and getting himself easy buckets. And it's just something that, goes overlooked for a lot of players, and it's also something that a lot of young players maybe just don't have, which is that off-ball movement and feel, and spatial awareness that I think Risacher has. And he's also, like, the big question was always the creation with him, and could he put the ball on the floor? And obviously they're not running a ton of pick and rolls with him, they're not isolating him, but when the ball comes to him and he's got to attack a closeout or it's the end of a shot clock, like, he's not scared to put it on the ground. It's not like he can't dribble. I really like it, and it's really just like seeing him get more comfortable with the shot and seeing those shots go in, and now realizing what he can do and what he can be. It's been great. And honestly, he's listed at 6'8". He looks taller to me. Maybe it's just because he's skinny, but I think, having a shooter and a shot maker at that size is so incredibly valuable.
Absolutely. I think it's a little bit of the skinny factor too, because I thought that as well. Like, he looks a little bit taller. But then you see him go up against guys like Tatum, and you're like, Tatum's listed at like 6'9". He's probably a little closer to 6'10", and he's got some size on Risacher, so it's kind of hard to say. You mentioned, two guys that run in transition harder than him. Like, name two guys. I can name two guys. It's Jalen Johnson when he was healthy, and Dyson Daniels. Those are the two. And those happen to be his teammates down in Atlanta. Both those guys are going to be great mentors to him, even though they're pretty young themselves. I love what they're building here in Atlanta. I think they're really interesting. They got a bunch of just very versatile, toolsy guys that you feel comfortable having out there and playing. I think you probably obviously need to add a star. You hope that Jalen Johnson kind of morphs into that, and you hope that Trey continues to ascend and become a reliable and an efficient scorer along with the facilitating job there. But I mean, for Atlanta, really injuries is what have done them dirty so far this year. But you got to be ha happy with that Risacher pick for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your side dish?
Okay, my side dish number one, another kind of young guy. I'm just gonna talk about Josh Giddey. I mean, this season he's been averaging 14.3 points per game, 7 rebounds, 2.2 steals, 7.8 assists on 2.8 turnovers, and 38.4% shooting from three. But the last 10 games, he has been playing out of his mind. He's averaging 23.8 points per game, 9.7 rebounds, 10 assists on 3.3 turnovers. And he's shooting a ridiculous 51% from three. The thing to me here is he's sort of really becoming what we thought he could be in terms of that really high facilitating guard, the guy that just kind of sees things that other people aren't seeing, high up tempo guard, a one that, you saw him playing against the Lakers and he's guarding Luka full court and he's causing these fights because he's being so pesky and annoying. And now he's able to kind of add a jumper. If you look at when he was on OKC, and really I think the getting rid of him point was in that series against Dallas, I believe. He just could not make a shot, and Dallas was letting him stay open knowing he wasn't going to make a shot. And I think OKC saw that and was like, look, we're trying to make a push here. I think we should sell on this guy. It was a really tough year for him last year. To see him, kind of put it all together, start to hit shots, He really fits in with what this weird thing that Chicago's doing, which I'll take full credit. I was dead wrong. I said they're the dumbest team in the league. Clearly, I was wrong about that because they've been winning a lot of games. But Giddey has been playing really well, showing why he was worth that trade. And if you actually look at the trade now, I think it's a really perfect win-win trade. Now, Caruso's only played 48 games this season, and he's averaging 6.9 points per game, 2.8 rebounds per game, and 2.6 assists this season. That being said, though, he's not there to score and facilitate and all that. His number one thing is to just be a part of that two-headed defensive monster that they have alongside Lu Dort and honestly the rest of the team in Oklahoma. He is really, really good for that Oklahoma City Thunder team. I think this is just a really interesting trade, and I wanted to harp on Josh Giddey a little bit because the Bulls have been looking really good, and Giddey's been a big part of that.
Yeah, well, it's amazing what a new situation can do for a guy and what a new role can do for a guy. Because I think the good moments with Giddey, even in OKC, were when the ball was in his hands and when he was running the show and he was getting downhill, he's facilitating, he's getting to the rim. He's this, big guard with a great handle and a unbelievable feel and this like true like passing gift of just seeing things that other guys don't see. And at that size, that's just a special quality that you don't see all that often. And that's why a smart franchise like the Thunder drafted him. But pairing him next to a guy like Shai, who is obviously one of the best players in the league and needs the ball as much as he does, and then Giddey's relegated to the corner or having to play off ball, like that's just not where he's best, especially last year when he really wasn't making any shots. So yeah, I agree. It's a win-win. I mean, the Thunder obviously getting Caruso was a great move, and Giddey just wasn't the right fit for them. And I'm still not sure, what Giddey is long term, but I think it's pretty clear that, when that trade first happened and there was all this backlash to the Bulls, like why are you trading a really valuable veteran and reliable player in Alex Caruso for a guy in Josh Giddey who literally was a big reason that the Thunder were not able to get further than they did and really played himself out of the playoff rotation. So I mean it's just been awesome to see. And I think regardless of what you think his ceiling is, I think he's going to be a good player for a long time, and maybe he's not going to be like your star, or maybe he's not going to be the lead ball handler or the starting point guard on a championship team, but at the very least, he's going to give you good minutes. And if he keeps shooting like this, then he absolutely will be a starter and a very valuable player going forward.
But I mean, like what he portrayed, like what he could project to be is super interesting. I mean, someone his size, he's a 6'8 point guard. Like that's
Yeah.
kind of, it's very unique and interesting. I love those big point guards like him. In terms of facilitation, I could see him being a guy that can facilitate an offense efficiently. That's never really been the issue. He's always been a good passer. The turnover to assist ratio is okay. Obviously needs to clean that up a little bit, but I guess the thing with him, as you alluded to, has just been that scoring ability. I think he misses, when I watch Giddey, he misses a ton of layups, like a ton of just getting, he gets
Well,
to
he's
the
just not
rim really
athletic.
well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just misses a lot of those layups, kind of bunnies at the rim. If he can clean stuff up like that and consistently have this jumper, I do think he's someone that's like very important to, could be very important to a very good team. He's kind of like an old school guard that you don't really see anymore. You don't want to say like he's Magic Johnson because that's kind of a lazy comp because he's a big size guard who, playmakes and all that. But there's something there with Giddey where I think he's interesting just because of what he is. I don't really know. I know he's good enough where I'm confident that he's going to be a solid like 8+ year career in the NBA guy because he's too good to fail. I just hope that they're able to build with him in Chicago. They've got something interesting with Bouzelis, that's for sure, and Giddey, and just kind of these young pieces. I'm really interested to see what they do in this year's draft, where you can get a really high upside guy and or a good lottery guy. I forget how the picks convey this year. I think they traded to get their pick back, so they should have a pretty solid first round pick. I would love to see them add someone really interesting and unique to kind of go in, maybe be the number one scoring option, but someone that does so. Like from a good shooting point of view, I don't know. There's a lot of moves they could make here, but I think they got something for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fun there for a couple years, I think, with Modest, with Coby White, Josh Giddey. I like Io. I mean, Patrick Williams contract none of us like, but I
Yeah.
think overall, like, Chicago is probably feeling a lot better than themselves right now than they were, I don't know, 2, 3 months ago during the trade deadline, and through all the Levine kind of weirdness there. But yeah,
Absolutely.
can I go to my second side dish?
Go right ahead.
All right, so unfortunate news coming out of Milwaukee was Damian Lillard out indefinitely with a blood clot. They're calling it deep vein thrombosis, which is, I think, just a fancy name for a blood clot. It's the same thing that Wemby got. It's in Dame's calf, so obviously expecting him to miss the remainder of this season. And now it's going to be 2 straight years of Dame and Giannis, and we're not going to see them play together in a playoff series. I'm just wondering kind of where this is headed, if it could get ugly. I was pretty happy with their Kuzma trade and what it looked like early on, and I thought it really helped the defense. They just haven't been able to score, and it's a weird thing because I think there's a lot of offensive talent here. I don't know if any of it really fits together. And Kuzma, of course, has not been very good offensively. And you look at the ages on this team now. Like, Dame's 34. Chris Bosh got a similar injury at a similar age, and it basically ended his career. So this is a scary thing, especially when you're at this stage. Brook Lopez is 36 years old, and honestly, by the night, is becoming less impactful as a defender. I just think he is possibly the single slowest player in the league, and in a league where, like, it's all this modern spacing and shooting and pace, and you want to have switchable guys and guys who can defend multiple positions and switch out on the perimeter. Brook just simply cannot do that. So I think, as much as I like him offensively and having a stretch five next to Giannis, I think is absolutely the best way to build an offense around him. Like, they don't have that elite unit that I feel like they used to, whereas they're, like, pretty good on defense and they're all right on offense. They used to be, elite on defense and good on offense. And now they're not elite on either end because of this personnel now. So, interesting stuff now gonna happen with Giannis because he is under contract until the 27 season. And he said that he wants to be in Milwaukee, but he actually clarified that he wants to be in Milwaukee as long as they're a contender. And I'm not sure how long this team is gonna be able to look Giannis in the face and say, we think we're a contender. So I just think if this goes bad, we could end up seeing some Giannis drama down
Oh,
the line.
pick me. I can tell you when they can look in his face and tell him they're not a contender. They can do that right fucking now. They're not a contender. I mean, this team is very poorly built. They're aging, yet somehow their backup guys that are coming in now are too young to be impactful. This is just such a weird team, and I will forever not understand that AJ Johnson pick, I believe last year.
I was just gonna
It
say.
was insane in the moment when we were doing the live draft, like, just a ridiculous pick. Like, the youngest guy in the draft gets taken by the oldest team. He's a raw prospect. He wasn't a first round grade. I think he might have been a late riser, kind of late in the game. But I mean, this is a guy you could have traded up for in the second round. I didn't see picking, or if even God forbid, like, I don't know why
Yeah,
they
but he's
picked him in the
hooping,
first
dude.
place.
He's actually balling
Yeah.
out on the Wizards.
I know he is balling out on the Wizards. That's the type of team that needs him. They're not going to be able to put him into meaningful regular season minutes and get stuff out of him because he's super young and he's super raw. And this was a team that needs to win games. You're not going to play a 17-year-old that needs to develop in those game-winning moments. And I just that move doesn't make sense to me. And like, I guess they thought adding the youngest guy in the league would just bring their mean age down on ESPN, from like 32 to 28 because he's 17 years old. But to me, this team is just built so strangely. Bobby Portis, I don't know when he's coming back from suspension or if it's going to be this year or next year. He's 31, and you kind of sold high or bought high on this Kuzma guy that I don't know why I said this Kuzma guy, like, we don't know who he is. You bought high on Kuzma, and I mean, look, he runs the floor well, he cuts well. He's just not going to be what he once was in LA or like what you're projecting him to be. And to me, I don't think there's any scenario where they're, a contender. And obviously, Giannis is, top three or four best players in the league. So you're always going to have a chance when he's on your team. But he can't do everything. And his style of play doesn't lend itself to him being, this great facilitator for an entire offense that can just kind of run with him. I mean, Giannis is really good. He's going to get his and all that for sure. He needs someone to kind of take that burden and kind of playmake. And he can hold down the defense and all the other stuff. If I'm him, I'm getting ready to get out of here. I mean, they're trying their best. They're fucked right now. They got to move on from him. I mean, they're just gonna waste more years of Giannis. I don't. Do
You
you
think they
see a
should just
path?
trade Giannis
Well, no. I don't think the Bucks should, but I think Giannis should request a trade if I was him.
Gotcha. I have a theory about the Bucks, and it has no statistical backing. There is nothing that I can support this with. I think that they have just a general playmaking issue, like beyond their stars, beyond Dame and Giannis being, score first guys. Like, I really think when you look at teams like the Celtics or the Thunder or all these driving kick teams, all the role players make the right driving kick decisions every time. Like Derek White drives a closeout and he sees the floor very well and he always hits the open guy. And then whoever he hits, if he drives a closeout, he sees the floor the same way and always hits the open guy. For me, it's like Kuzma tries really hard. He's not a great passer. Kevin Porter Jr. just wants to put shots up, like really isn't trying to facilitate and look for other guys. He's trying to take tough shots all the time. Torian Prince, like, has been an awesome shooter. Gary Trent Jr. is a very valuable NBA player and a good shooter, good player. But like, those guys aren't playmakers. They're not good passers. They don't see the game that way. So I honestly, like, I have this weird theory that none of these players are good enough decision makers to have like a contending team. And I think it's easy to say, like, you should put Giannis with a bunch of shooters, and that should be, the perfect fit. And it clearly isn't, like, because that's kind of what they have. They've been a top five 3-point shooting team all season, but it hasn't quite clicked offensively. And maybe you can say that's, Dame and Giannis not being as lucrative as a duo or as compatible of a duo as we thought they would be. But I think there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I think the specific build of what type of role players they brought in is just ha it hasn't worked out. Same thing could go for Brook Lopez. Like, I just think it's becoming a modern game where you want to play five out and you want to drive and kick and you want to have everybody who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And I think they have a lot of specialists on this team, and I just don't think it's a great build. But that's my theory. I don't know if it's true at all.
You're telling me that you think Ryan Rollins and Kevin Porter Jr. and AJ Green are not pass first facilitators? That's shocking to me.
Well, it's
I
not
would
pass
never have
first
guessed that.
facilitators. It's just like
They're specialists.
a lot of role players can put the ball on the floor and attack closeouts and make good decisions on driving kicks when the floor is like spread and they're attacking and they have advantages. And I don't think they have guys that can do that.
Absolutely not. I wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, I think Kevin Porter Jr. is a specialist in terms of just being one of the worst. He made one of the worst decision makers in the entire NBA. I think everything he does on the floor is just shockingly, just such a bad decision every time. So that's always fun to watch. But I mean, yeah, we watch a lot of Milwaukee, and they just don't make sense. They can't get into a rhythm, right? Like they can't ever just go on a long winning streak where they kind of feel like they put everything together. And granted, a lot of that is because of injuries. Obviously, when you're missing, your second leading scorer in Dame Lillard, it's going to be hard to kind of get into this flow. You're missing a really important key player in Bobby Portis. You've had Andre Jackson Jr.'s had some injury issues. AJ Green's had some injury issues, like stuff like that. But this team, like, I don't know what this fix is, right? Because they're a second apron team, I believe, still, or
They're
I think they
not
might have
quite,
just. They just got under it with that Chris Middleton trade. So maybe there is something they can do in the offseason, but you got a couple of things working against you here. They don't have a ton of assets that are really going to get a team to, trade them someone that's really impactful, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know what a package they like centered around an aging Brook Lopez and maybe a Kyle Kuzma really fetches you on the open market this summer. If you trade guys like that, like I don't know who they're bringing in. And then in terms of free agency, like no offense, Milwaukee, but I don't think they're necessarily a free agency destination. So to me, I mean, I don't really know who you're going to add and what you're going to add to make Giannis happy. And Giannis has a good amount of leverage. I mean, 2027 isn't super far down the road. And if he makes it clear to them that he's not going to re-sign, you have to trade that asset, especially when it's a massive asset like Giannis, who has a couple of years left on his deal. I mean, you got to probably look to trade him this summer. I mean, if you don't think you can put a team around him that's going to be good enough to contend, and I just don't see what those pieces are that they can put around him to be good enough to contend.
I think there's like a, I don't know, 5%, maybe less, some sort of chance that Giannis is a Grizzly in
Really?
2026 or
Dude, what?
27 or something, and Jaw is a buck or it's a
Oh,
some
so you're
sort of
saying
blockbuster. I don't know.
you're like, you know what? The pick and roll wasn't working with Giannis, but we know Ja likes PNR. Let's get him in there and have a weird game. I guess I don't even know the pick. I guess a Brook Lopez and Ja Morant pick and roll when Ja's not a good pick and roll ball handler. Yeah, let's see how that works with a potentially
Yeah, I mean, I don't
rear-ended.
know. I'm just trying to think of like what would a Giannis package realistically fetch you, and it would be a superstar combined with a bunch of picks. Like maybe there's a KD Giannis or a Devin Booker Giannis trade out there somewhere. Maybe there's a Rockets package that they bring him in.
AD and a pick, I think. AD and some seconds, maybe.
Yep.
In the middle of the night, I think that's probably a good one. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Like, I don't know. He other than Luka, he would be the biggest guy to go, right? I'm trying to think off the top of trades. It's like
No,
Kevin
he would
Durant.
be. I mean, it's Durant, but yeah.
Yeah, it's Durant. We're not saying now, but in the past, and then Luka. And then it would be on like those three guys I think are all on similar levels. I mean, maybe
Yeah.
Luka's a little bit ahead of everybody, but yeah, Giannis, I don't know what, like, if you're looking at, I guess Houston puts together a really great package. I mean, Oklahoma City can just
Oh,
overwhelm
God.
anyone. Yeah, that was terrifying if they're like, you know what?
Yeah,
I
but
think
that would have to be like,
like Chet almost, or
that would have to be Chet, and I don't think they
yeah,
would
or
do.
J-Dub.
I don't know if the Bucks would even go for
Well, it
J-Dub.
has
Like,
to be Chet. It has to be Chet because they can't have Giannis, Chet, and Isaiah Hart signed. So it's got to be like Chet, definitely. And I don't think OKC does that, but maybe they do. I mean,
maybe
maybe
they do.
Chet.
Maybe they're like, you
Yeah.
know what? Shea and Giannis, here we go. 3 years of
Why
dominance
not? Yeah.
instead
Why
of
not?
10 years. Yeah. I
I
don't
mean,
know.
yeah. Why not? Right. And it's like, yeah. Oh, that's frightening. So yeah, Giannis doesn't have, like, he. It's gonna be interesting to see how this plays out because, like I said, he does have some leverage in terms of just letting them know, like, hey, I'm not re-signing here. You're gonna move that asset. That's what they've taught us in the past. But who's gonna take him? Like, who has the ability to overwhelm them with a package for Giannis? I don't know. So, gonna be a really interesting summer and next year or two for the Bucks for sure. I'm gonna go to my next side dish here, and it's another trade piece. Go figure. Mine is the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. And I'm just going to list some of the teams that have been affiliated with potentially trading for Kevin Durant this offseason. And we'll start with the Spurs. They just have the picks that they can use to kind of overwhelm the Suns. Same thing with the Rockets, except they have more players that are probably more attractive to the Suns. We have the Knicks. I saw a package for OG Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson. I don't know what their pick situation looks like off the top of my head, but that was just something I saw online. The Heat, I looked into this. This is above my pay grade as one of the very, like, I'm not quite a trade machine guru, but I do like to tinker. This one was a little out of my pay grade. This is going to be like a three or four teamer, I think. I just couldn't really get it done. I couldn't figure out what assets would be attractive to the Suns for Kevin Durant. So I kind of took them out of there. The Mavericks, this one's interesting. It would be like something like Klay and PJ Washington and picks for Kevin Durant. That one could be interesting. You reunite him with Kyrie and AD and you say, all right, let's see how this really old big three can play. That'd be kind of fun. This is the one that's scary to me, and this is the one that I think might actually happen for a few reasons. The Boston Celtics, they just got bought by a man named Bill Chisholm. We have this new thing in the NBA. Well, it's been a thing forever. It's called the new owner syndrome. Most recently, we saw it with Matt Ishbia just basically selling off the Suns that way. Well, buying the Suns and then selling off their team to inherit Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant. There is a trade out there. It's Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant. You got to kind of tinker it a little bit because they're like a couple thousand, 100,000 off on the scale. Essentially, the thought process here is that this team gets super expensive for Bill Chisholm when in the next coming years. If you're looking at Jaylen Brown's contract, he's making 50, or excuse me, 49 million this year, 53 next year, 57 the year after that, 61 in 2027, 2028, and 64 in 2028, 2029, $64 million. He'll be 32 years old at that time. If you're looking at KD's breakdown, however, he's making 51 this year, he's making 54 next year, and then he's done. So the idea behind this is that you're trading Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant, someone who's going to be, we know, is a proven playoff performer, someone that is one of the best players in the league. You're trading Jaylen Brown, who's had kind of an iffy season, someone that we've had questions about his fit, although they did win a title, so maybe those questions are kind of strange. You're getting off of him. You're selling high on Jaylen Brown. You're getting off of him before he becomes extremely expensive. You're getting KD on the books. It keeps you relevant for the next 2 years, right around the time that they're going to have to start making some really difficult financial decisions. This frees you up some financial space to go and sign some guys to build around this core of Tatum and whoever else you want to stick around. Because let's face it, this summer, there's going to be some tough questions about Sam Hauser, potentially Porzingis, potentially Jrue Holiday. This team gets really expensive extremely quickly. And that's kind of why I fear that this thing could definitely have some legs, because Boston's been tied to KD for a while. And I just really love Jaylen Brown. I would hate to see him go. But the trade does technically make sense when you're just talking about it from financial implications and from when big trades happen. You're looking at new owners come in, most recently, like Nico Harris's. I don't know that the Dumont family ownership group, they brought Nico Harrison in, and boom, you have one of the dumbest trades in history. So just putting that out there. I think this is I think the KD sweepstakes haven't been talked about this enough this summer, because teams have it's evident that the Suns want to trade him, and there's a lot of teams that I can't tell until it actually ends up like that he is for sale. I'm really interested to see what teams like scramble to try and put something together if a big trade happens, or if he just takes that minimum, like you said, a year or two down the line and signs with a contender. So I know I just went on a crazy spiel, so please tell me what your thoughts were on this one.
I mean, I think the Jaylen Brown one is kind of far-fetched. I just don't think the Suns would want a guy who's like a win now guy when they're, kind of blowing it up and selling the
Yeah.
farm. And pairing, Jaylen Brown with Devin Booker, although they would be a pretty fun, maybe potentially scrappy team, depending on the role players, it's not a contender. And I think, the Rockets packages, the Grizzlies packages, the young teams and, or excuse me, the young players and picks packages is definitely more appealing to the Suns. But honestly, like, as a Celtics fan, as hard as it is to say, like, I think I'd be down for this. If this was this summer, I think I would accept this trade if I was Brad Stevens in the Celtics, because honestly, Kevin Durant has been like, he's put himself into all NBA talks in this last couple of months. Obviously, he's more injury prone than Jaylen, but I think when you think about a playoff run and you think about raising the ceiling of your team and trying to compete with a potential dynasty in OKC, a really good team in Cleveland, the Lakers with Luka and LeBron, like Durant on the Celtics makes so much sense from a basketball standpoint. It almost is like it feels silly to say, like, yeah, obviously, but I just want to put it out there. Yes, I would accept.
Yeah, I would too. It's not just because I'm a massive Kevin Durant fan and he's one of my favorite players of all time, but I would get the Celtics jersey quite. I do have dreams of the Kevin Durant in the green jersey every once in a while, but JB's our guy. We can't sell out on him, but I do think from basketball, and most importantly, this makes financial sense. Getting that much money off your books, 70, like the year that KD comes off our books in 2027 is the year that Brown makes $57 million. And then you have $125 million combined for the next 2 years for JB. Saving $125 million, that's going to get you a lot of guys that you can potentially bring in through free agency or through trades or whatever it may be that you can build with what you have in Tatum, because Tatum has taken a leap. And I don't think we've talked about that enough on the pod. Tatum is playing the best he's ever played. He's got a little edge to him now. He's just so good at basically every facet of the game. You really want to play with this guy. Clearly, he's your number one. You want to continue to build out this core that you have and kind of just hopefully sub in pieces where guys get old and kind of dwindle away. Like we talked about, we were texting a lot last night about how once Al Horford retires, our championship ceiling seriously
Well, yeah,
changes
I
because.
jokingly tweeted like when Horford retires is the Celtics championship window closed, but it legitimately is like not many teams have actually, I think possibly no other team has a backup center that can space the floor like Al Horford and switch out onto the perimeter and guard multiple positions and also do all the big man stuff like block shots and rebound and run the floor and guard big guys. Like he is incredible. Not just like you don't have to preface it with at this age he's really good. No, he is one of the best role players, period, in the league, regardless of age. So yeah, I mean, Horford, like Drew has definitely declined. Obviously, Horford at some point here is gonna decline in the next couple of years, and Porzingis with the injury stuff might not be around on the team for very long with the money that he you know is gonna be making. So it's gonna get really weird for the Celtics.
But they have picks, and this is a draft that's loaded and a draft that I do think they can address their needs. The problem is it's going to be expensive to bring in those picks because you have to pay that rookie scale situation. Like, I think Sam Haues is probably gone this year because he gets a tiny bit expensive, and you can kind of split Sam Hauser into two or three rookie scale contracts at this point. And I think, like, you're seeing Shireman play more as the Sam Hauser, you know,
Yeah.
replacement, right? And the guy I'm looking at, and I'm hoping he didn't rise too much because of his really solid performance for Duke, but the guy I'm looking at is Tyrese Proctor. Getting him in the late first, or if you, God forbid, he slips to the second, we can pick him up there. That would be a home run pick. A guy that is a high upside, high defensive guy. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like a Drew-ish type player. Obviously, that's a high comp for a guy like him, but Proctor, I think, is a guy that's a little bit older, more NBA ready, a guy that you can kind of plug and play, hopefully. You're going to have to get in and get someone that's sort of this like Drew Holiday replacement, Sam Hauser replacement. It's going to get sticky with your Derek White and your Porzingis contracts as well. Like, someone's going to have to move on. And honestly, I don't know if it's easier, but it's a lot more money off the books with Jaylen Brown moving on. As much as I don't want to see him go because I love Jaylen Brown, that's, but I'm just
Yeah, I mean,
saying.
if it's KD, I'm all right. I love Jalen,
Yeah,
and he
I
was
love
our
Jaylen.
Finals MVP. But if it's KD,
I
I think I,
fucking love Kevin Durant. I don't think that can
yeah,
be understated.
yeah.
And he, like I said, he keeps them relevant. Like, he's good enough where he keeps them competitive for the next 2 years. So, that was my side dish. What's your main course? I'm
All right,
excited.
we're to the main dishes. We're to the pulled pork. My main course is about the Clippers, and it's just about how good they are. And I'm trying to figure out if this is just a trick, if it's the same thing that we've seen in a couple years prior with this Kawhi Clippers team. You know, how real are they? Is it even fair to talk about this Clippers team in terms of contention when Kawhi Leonard's their best player and hasn't had a meaningful playoff run really since joining the Clippers? So, with that said, they are 10 and 13, or excuse me, they're 10 and 3 in their last 13. Good wins in that span. They've beaten Memphis, Cleveland, Detroit, New York twice, and Sacramento. And then two of the three losses were to Cleveland and OKC, both competitive games. So they're right there with these top teams, and you watch them night in, night out with Kawhi looking rejuvenated and healthy and athletic. He looks like Kawhi. And then you combine that with the fact that they're 10 deep. They have a solid defense and they have all these options offensively. They have experience. They have everything that you would think would translate to the playoffs. They have the Ben Simmons wild card, Max. Ben Simmons.
No. No.
okay, maybe
I saw
not.
him get a tip in. I was watching film on them to prep for this, and I was watching their game against the Knicks, and he came in like third quarter and he got like this little tip in. I was like, "Oh, Ben Simmons."
I
Forgot about
think,
him.
I mean, I've seen him have more good stretches than just
Yes,
tip-ins, but yeah.
yes.
But in terms of playoffs, like they really have everything that you'd want. Maybe their defense could be a slight issue with like Harden and Powell getting picked on, but overall, like they're right there with these teams, man. I just wonder if it's silly to talk about a Kawhi-led team after all the injuries.
I don't think it's silly because he sat out so much time. Maybe he was preparing for this playoff run. That's kind of what I'm hoping. Kawhi, I mean, he's not peak Kawhi right now, obviously, because he's pretty old and he's gone through a lot of injuries, but he's pretty much the closest we've seen athletically in a long, long time. He's doing things, he just moves quicker and he jumps quicker and he just looks really healthy right now. Like you said, betting on Kawhi health is never a good thing, but honestly, him paired with James Harden, like J James Harden has the ball in his hands a ton of time, and maybe with that's a little less pressure on Kawhi as taking on that offensive burden. And maybe because he's been, you know, rehabbing and he's been out for so long, he's just been prepared to go through these long battles of the playoffs. I really hope so. I think the Clippers, and we've talked about this as well, that they can really make some noise. I don't think a lot of teams are ready for what they can bring. And you mentioned like their defense. There's some issues with the guards there. I think their coaching staff actually makes up for those defensive lapses because you got Van Gundy and you got the Ty Lue there, and both of those guys are genius coaches. Van Gundy is an incredible defensive mind, and you see it in the game. Like, he's coaching up so hard. And I was watching, like, that Knicks game was really big to me because defensively, you were seeing, like, Tyler Kolek played a lot, and I like Tyler Kolek offensively. Defensively, he was lost. And I did the thing where after every shot, I paused and I went backwards and was like, how did they make that shot? Right? Just seeing what happened. And a lot of it was just the Knicks. Now, the Knicks are a bad defensive team, but their rotations, they were confused. They were switching without calling it out, and guys were just getting lost in confusion and everything. And then you see it against the Clippers, right? And you see how the Clippers play defense, and it's just completely different. Guys are fluid. They know what they're doing. They're talking. They're vocal. They have really good rotations. Like, Zoo is a really just great. He's so big. He's hard to score on. He's a great rim protector. He's got some meat to him, so you can't really push him around. And then Kawhi is just one of the best on-ball defenders you have. Defensively, this team's insanely, like, well-oiled. And then I like that what I've seen is that they stagger James Harden and Kawhi at points where I believe the start of the third, they usually have James Harden sit for a little bit, and those kind of let Kawhi cook for a little bit. And he's absolutely just capable of doing that. No one can guard him. His mid-game is just insane. I think when it comes to playoff times, you take the guys with the scars. And Kawhi has a lot of the scars, and a lot of those guys on this team have the scars, like Zubats and what's his face, Bogdanovich and Chris Dunn. Like, there's guys that have been in some
Powell.
Powell, absolutely a Powell. James Harden, well, he's got some scars. I don't know if they're good
Well, here's
scars.
the
They're
thing, though.
not
It's a
cool
different role
ones.
for Harden. It's not like he's, MVP Harden
Yeah.
carrying this whole offense.
No.
Like, they have so many guys. Obviously Kawhi is now, your number one scoring option, even though Harden's probably gonna have the ball in his hands most of the time. But Harden having the ball in his hands, I don't think is a bad thing. Harden having to take all the shots is probably the bad thing, but he doesn't have to. Last 15 for Kawhi now. He's 25.6 a game on 53.6% from the floor and 43.3 from three. He's given you seven rebounds and three assists as well, along with 1.8 steals. So he's just been absolutely elite. But I have my eye on this play-in game. This 7-8 game is going to be insane, and 5, 6, and 7 right now in the West are separated by one game. That's Memphis, Golden State, Minnesota, and LA. So excuse me, it's 5 through 8. They're all separated by one game. In that 7-8 game, whoever wins that in the play-in gets the 7 seed and is going to play whoever it is in the 2 seed. Right now, it's Houston. Whoever's the 8 seed is obviously going to play OKC. So I think that game is going to be an absolute bloodbath and is going to set up whichever team wins it to have at least a chance to go on a run, because whoever draws OKC in the first round for me is probably getting bounced, even though I think the Clippers could make it competitive. But just keep an eye on that 7-8 game, because it's gonna basically effectively end one of their seasons.
Are we sure the Clippers are that afraid of OKC? I don't know if they are.
See, I'm hearing the OKC stuff all over again,
No,
and
OKC is incredible. OKC is incredible, and it's nothing against them. It's more so like the Clippers, they match up interest in an interesting way.
yeah, I mean,
That's all I'm saying.
I think the Clippers are really good. I think they're really deep. I think they have a ton of lineup versatility. I think matchup wise, they can match up and play whatever style you want them to play, but Oklahoma City is just overwhelmingly talented to me, and they
Yeah,
have
definitely.
this like generationally good defense. They have a generational player in Shea who's having one of the best guard seasons of all time, and he's going to win MVP. And Chet's getting really, really good, and I don't see OKC not coming out of the West, honestly. Like, I'm hearing people say they're not a heavy favorite in the West, and it's not like all this OKC stuff isn't as bad as it was last year when they were like weakest one seed ever and all this. I think people are giving them more respect than that now, but there is still the like people that are saying they're not going to come out of the West, or they're not the favorites to come out of the West, or they might not make it past the second round, or watch out for this team in the first round. And it's just like, come on. Like, I don't know what else they have to do to prove it to us. So I'm still all in on OKC. That's why I'm so interested in that 7-8 game.
Yeah, I guess my thought process is Zubac is just a kind of a tough. So the what's it called? The fast pace of OKC, if they can play Zoo off the floor, that's going to be key, right? If he just can't keep up with what they're doing, because they get so many steals, they just have a lot of they play at a strange tempo, right? Because Shea is really good at slowing the tempo down for his gain, but if they keep the tempo up, keep it going, in terms of just getting a lot of steals and hitting the rim hard and everything like that, it's gonna be interesting to see if Zubac can stay on the floor. If he does stay on the floor, I think that the matchup that I'm pretty fascinated with, there's two of them. It's Kawhi versus, I'm assuming SGA. I'm assuming that's going to be the defensive assignment, and then it's Zubats and Chet. Because if Zoo can just like bang with Chet and get him, off out of the series, that's a lot more pressure on
Yeah,
J-Dub.
I mean, they also have Hartenstein. Interesting wrinkle for the Clippers basically every night now is Chris Dunn making threes or not? Because
True.
every team leaves Chris Dunn. And on the nights where he makes the threes, he stays on the court and he's this unbelievable defender. And then he's just hitting like wide open, conceded threes. But then the nights where he misses, like you really can't play him. So that's another thing to look for going forward. Because I think honestly, like you mentioned Kawhi on SGA, I think they would start Chris Dunn, and then depending on whether he's playing well offensively, kind of go from there.
Yeah, and I think I can tell you who is also making his threes, or who is making their threes, and that's Bogey. He's shooting out of his mind right now. I think he's at like, I don't know, 50% from three right now. So,
49% in his last 15 from three. He's been
he's
unbelievable.
going off.
And awesome, like underrated pickup midway through the season.
Absolutely. Just that would be a really fascinating series. I think Golden State's another one. Just a lot of really fascinating series. The West is going to be a ridiculous gauntlet, and I think that's why people are a little afraid. But I'm with you. Like, I don't know what more. I mean, they just have to win. That's it.
Well, yeah,
The
it does. Like, I get it because for OKC, you're going to win what, 65 or I don't know. They're going to win what, 67 plus games. And their reward is going to be one of these really awesome, like, veteran teams. Unless it's Memphis. I mean, if Memphis really slides, but in all likelihood, like, it's probably Golden State, Minnesota, or the Clippers. And it's like these teams have been here before. They have real defenders, they have athletes, they have, big time superstars and scorers. These teams have everything. So it's just like, the West has been a gauntlet all year and they happen to have, slipped into this 6 to 8 range. So it is, I get it, like OKC is gonna have a tough matchup in the first round. I just don't see them losing it. Could it go six? Sure. But that's all I'm getting
Sure.
at.
I think it's more so that they're just playing a bunch of they could potentially be playing a bunch of teams that just aren't afraid of OKC.
Yeah,
Minnesota's not
but
afraid
I
of
don't know if I
OKC.
buy into that. Like, is anybody afraid of anybody? Is Memphis afraid of OKC?
I think there's teams that are afraid of OKC for sure. But I think Minnesota, like Memphis should be afraid of OKC.
They
I think
should be, but I
Memphis,
think everybody should be. I think the Clippers should be. I
but
mean,
I don't think Minnesota is afraid of them. I think Minnesota plays OKC well every time they've played, and
but yes, but what I'm saying is, I don't think any team goes into a series afraid. Even like
I would disagree with that.
subconsciously, I don't think they do. Like I think every time you are a professional athlete going into a series, you're like, yep, we got it. Even if it's completely delusional and irrational.
I don't know about that. I guess these guys are competitive, fucking crazy people, to get to this level. But I do think there are guys that go in and are like, "There's no fucking way we make it. This team's insane." There has to be. There has to be guys like that. Ant, no, Ant is not the one. But that's what I'm saying. Ant is like, "I will fucking win this. I'm not afraid of OKC."
You don't think Jaws like that?
I think Jaw's like that, but I think the rest of OKC, or I don't know. I don't know. I that's what I'm saying though. It kind of goes to my point too, where it's like people just aren't afraid of OKC. Those
But
teams
I don't
that
think
have been
anyone
there.
is ever afraid. I don't think you could point to a team in
True.
history that has ever been afraid, is what I'm saying.
That's fair. I feel like there has to have been one, but I don't know enough off the top of my head. I feel like there's a Jeff Teague player podcast where he's like, "Man, we fucking knew that we were gonna get our asses wiped." And this fucking, there's got to be like some eighth seed Atlanta team or whatever seed Atlanta Hawks teams with like Horford and
Yeah,
Teague that.
I don't know. I don't know if that's afraid or if it's just like a talent discrepancy where you're like, yeah, we're probably gonna lose, but we're gonna still fucking try and kick their ass. I don't know.
Fair,
Anyways.
but my point is like Minnesota, I think let's put it this way, they want to play. I think they want to play Denver. I don't think they have any worries about Denver. They play Denver really well every time, and I don't know if they'd be particularly worried about OKC. I think they would be like, "Oh fuck, this is gonna be a hard fought series," but I do think they aren't like super worried about it. This is a dumb argument. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with my main course. Okay. I've decided what the main course is. I don't feel great about it.
What is it?
But I Googled potluck main courses. They said lasagna is one of them, and they said mac and cheese, baked mac and cheese is one. Now I'm from the understanding that baked mac and cheese is a side dish. Now it's a
I was
great
gonna
side dish
say.
and it's extremely important, but it's a good side dish. Yeah, it's a side dish. So I'll go with the lasagna, right? Nice fucking meaty, just disgusting lasagna. One that would, get Garfield rolling in his fucking bed out of excitement here. And that is, Taylor Jenkins just got fired. Kind of out of nowhere, kind of not, now that we're getting more information on what happened. Is this like the what's it called? The canary in the coal mine of this Memphis Grizzlies team demise? And I think I'm going to say that first before you answer. A piece came out today on ESPN that you and I both read. It had reports from Ramona Shelburne and Michael C. Wright and Tim McMahon. And there was some ridiculously interesting quotes that you and I are going to talk about. But first, like, what were your initial thoughts on this Taylor Jenkins firing and just Memphis now, like hearing what knowing what you know now from everything that's come up? How are you feeling about Memphis?
So initial thoughts were total shock. Like 9 games left of the season before the playoffs. This guy is, by all accounts, an awesome coach. Has been there for 6 years, has had some really good success. And this Memphis team, like, had a very solid season. They're a top five seed at the time of him being fired. And they were, a top two seed for a lot of this season, and they just went on a little bit of a slide there. And I was like, wow, I don't know if that's a good decision, like right before the playoffs. But then we get all this info about, I didn't know this. This was already common knowledge, but he the Grizzlies had Taylor Jenkins basically get rid of his whole assistant coaching staff before this season and replace it with guys at the front office, basically handpicked from a couple guys from Europe. And Taylor Jenkins was really like upset about that, but also just, following orders and replaces his whole staff before the season, and then they're running this whole new offensive system, and it actually worked like really well for a long portion of this season. And then we get all this stuff about like Ja not liking the system and wanting the ball in his hands more because it was taking the ball out of his hands, and he wants to run more pick and roll. And it's just this, I don't know if Taylor Jenkins is like the scapegoat for basically doing everything he was told and asked to do and following like what this new staff wanted to do, and then he gets fired anyways because the team starts losing. So it's a puzzling decision by the front office. I think Taylor Jenkins is an excellent head coach, and it seems like there's some John Morant stuff in here that we can dive into that doesn't seem all that flattering.
Okay, so we pulled a bunch of quotes. The first one is, so you alluded to Taylor Jenkins. He brings in two assistants with him, right? And he's got this idea. It sounds like it's, I guess it's kind of like his idea is we're gonna try and play this like space out, type of basketball, kind of utilizing Ja, like making Ja better, because Ja's not a great pick and roll ball handling guy or a pick and roll player, if you will. They're trying to figure out how to make him optimize, okay? And this is after a horrible year. Jaw's been suspended, Jaren was hurt, like they got crazy injury bug. Memphis just had the year from hell, okay? Trying to figure everything out. They've also just missed out in this report. I didn't realize how close this was to happening, but they missed out on Draymond. Draymond was basically about to be signed and traded to Memphis at the final hour. Golden State comes in with a crazier offer of just way more money, and he accepts and signs with Golden State. So they miss out on Draymond. And they're kind of like in the weeds here. They also have missed out on Mikal Bridges and I believe KD. So they're talking about this and they go, Taylor Jenkins brings in two assistants with him. And Kleiman, the GM of the Grizzlies, insisted, quote, insisted Jenkins replace five of the assistant coaches who'd been with him throughout his time in Memphis, so 6 years. Brad Jones, Blake Ahern, Scottie Penn, Vitaly Potapenko, and Sonia Rahman. Jenkins goes along with the request and effort to be a good partner, said a league source who added he should not have been allowed, he should not have allowed this to happen. So like you said, to bring in two guys, he's now has to fire five of his guys. So they're trying to make this new offense, right? And the quote says, simplified, Memphis's offense consisted of utilizing pace with purpose and keeping the ball off of the floor. If there's an easy bucket to be had, you take it immediately. Otherwise, you morph into attack mode to break down and tax the opposing defense. Some of the offense was predicated on a player breaking down his man one-on-one without a screen. And initially, Morant seemed open to the new concepts that Jenkins and Klayman, again the GM, had considered a year before implementing them. Quote, "I'm setting a lot of different things. I'm seeing a lot of different looks now," Morant said. "I'm getting a lot of catch and shoot opportunities, back cuts, catch on the run. So I feel like it plays right into my hands and allows me to get better looks and not have to create so much." But then, when he's asked about how he felt playing off of the ball more, which is what the new offense is calling for, Morant seems less enthusiastic, saying, quote, "If that's what it is," he said, "whatever coach want to call, man, I'm fine with it." So this is not a great look for Ja, right? Where they're trying to make this offense that utilizes what he's good at. He's not a great pick and roll player, and there's stats to support this. I don't know. Are you on the doc? You want to read off the stats part, Jordan? I have it highlighted right now. Because he's just not like they're trying to optimize what he has going on, and they're trying to make it fit to what he needs to do. But if you read the stats off, like he's not a good pick and roll player. Did you get to him?
Yeah, I mean, so he averages 0.99 points per direct pick as the ball handler, which is 39th among 56 players to run at least 5,000 on-ball screens as the ball handler since 2019-2020. Also, only 44.7% EFG on jump shots coming off an off-ball screen in his whole career. Only Westbrook is worse among qualified players since 1920. But I mean, look, this new offense, it's really everybody touches it. We're all a threat. Everybody can shoot. Everybody can pass. Everybody can dribble. It's the modern NBA. It's what we touched on earlier. But it's less like, heliocentric. It's less ball dominant. It's less one guy. It's we are a team. Everybody, we don't care who scores, right? And Ja was kind of like, I care who scores. Like, I'm Ja Morant. I deserve more shots. I don't want to be standing in the corner. I don't want to have to, watch all these other guys drive and take shots when I am the superstar. This is, my team, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I do think it's a bad look because the team was winning. And the really interesting thing about this is that the team was doing so well with this offense. I think they were third in offensive rating for a while. And then in March, Morant seemed to get a little bit upset about it. And Taylor Jenkins then starts running all these pick and rolls for him. And they up their pick and roll percentage from, I think they ran like 40 pick and rolls per game before, and then in March they upped it to like 59, and Ja Morant's numbers skyrocket. He goes crazy. He averages like 29 in the month of March, obviously on way higher usage, but the team doesn't win
Starts
games.
losing.
And then Taylor Jenkins gets fired. So it's here's the thing. Like, yes, Ja is at fault here. But I'm just confused by what this front office wanted Taylor Jenkins to do.
Well, they said they wanted, quote, Klayman comes out today and he goes, "Urgency is a core principle of ours. My expectations are clarity of direction." What the fuck do you mean clarity of direction if you're firing your coach? I don't get it. Your direction's up. We know what your direction is. Like, I don't
But
understand.
so here's the other part of it. So they fire Jenkins and they also fire a new assistant that they brought in who was like the
Two of them.
ambassador of this pace and space offense that we're talking about where there's no ball screens. They fire that guy and they promote this guy Izarro to the interim head coach, and this guy is all about ball screens. So why did you fire Taylor Jenkins when he was just upping the ball screens, and now you promote the interim who is all about ball screens, but before the season you wanted to completely revamp the offense?
And
I
he did
just
by bringing in this entire new coaching staff to do the
Yeah.
revamping of the offense.
So if anyone doesn't have a direction, it's the front office who keeps telling this team to run different things, and Taylor Jenkins has no idea what they want.
Yeah. And I think they're talking about, so there's a quote and it's like they're worried about, so it says Jenkins tried to adjust and compromise. He started calling for more in pick and roll. They talk about how they ran more and, Job men immediately comes out and goes, "It's a little bit of old jaw, the old jaw." And then he said, how, they said, "How often have you felt this, that like that this season?" And he goes, "Not at all." And they're losing. They got a they're 8-13 since the break at this point. So he's getting fired for losing games, but it's going against completely the direction that they wanted them to go in, I guess, which was to make Jaw happy, right? Like I'm with you. Like I don't get what like he's clearly just the scapegoat for this. And I mean, like, are we, do you really want to sell everything out for Ja Morant to be the number one option on your team, like the number one best player on your team? I think we both have questions about that. Do you know how many games he's played this season?
I don't know.
He's played 45 games. He's played 45 games this season. That is not a lot, especially for your number one option. And he's not going to, let's just say this way, he's going to have to change his style of play to age more gracefully. He's a really explosive athlete, and he's already talked about doing that. But the guy can't shoot the basketball. So how are you going to age if you can't shoot the basketball? Your main way of scoring is getting to the rim. Not a great pick and roll player. Like I don't get what this is. Or you are great. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
It's so strange. I mean, I think the new offense, the front office was right. We need a new offense. Ja Morant can't carry this team like we thought he could. We should get other guys involved. We should go fully all in to the modern NBA, and they did it, and it worked. And then as soon as Ja Morant's upset, they go, "Oh, you know what, Ja? You're right.
Yeah, we're gonna
We'll
fire. We're also
fire
losing,
our
so we're gonna
coach."
fire. Yeah.
Who we told to actually run this new offense, and then it worked, and then we're gonna fire him, and we're gonna start doing it your way, which was it actually used to be Taylor Jenkins's way, which is
Yeah.
just like it doesn't make any sense.
Well, the thing that also doesn't make sense is you already covered this quote, but he's not a good, like, the style that he wants to play, he's not good at it. Like,
No, well,
he's
here's the
not like
thing.
he's not
If,
good at using screens.
like, look, we think John Morant's insanely talented. I don't think any smart basketball person thinks he is a surefire number one on a championship team. And if that's the case, then you should run the offense where everybody touches it and where it's really hard to guard all this movement and space and shooting and driving and kicking. And you shouldn't just put the ball in Ja Morant's hands. The guys that you do that with are the Lucas, the Shays, the LeBrons, the guys that you know are going to get you good looks and efficient scoring every single time down. And Morant's just not that.
Also, they talk about Taylor Jenkins losing the locker room,
Yeah.
and you hear Desmond Bane's post game comments, and it's like, well, coach wasn't the one shooting and the one missing shots and everything. And it's clear Desmond Bane misses him, and I haven't heard the comments from the other players, but
Well,
you
Jaw
want to talk
seems
about,
sad too. I mean, Jaw, like, Jaw played his whole career under Jenkins.
yeah,
And
I
I don't
mean.
think the players wanted him gone by any means.
Yeah, but they're talking about losing this locker room and like having a good teammate. Like, what if the divide is kind of with John? It's like, well, are we sacrificing team success for you to win? And also, as our number one, you kind of keep getting in trouble a lot. And it was an overreaction from the NBA. Like, I thought the punishment that he received was ridiculous and a little bit of an overreaction on their end. But the guy gets in trouble for playing with guns, right? Last night against the Celtics, he hits a shot and he fucking pretends to shoot a gun. Like, I don't know if you saw that celebration. He holds up a fucking rifle and
I
pretends to
did.
shoot a gun at someone.
Drew and
And
Scal
I was
were
like,
actually very funny about it.
yes. And I had it on very low because I was listening to an MLB game, but I kind of heard them say something, but I saw it too. And I was like, dude, like what the NBA did to you was kind of fucked up, obviously, but like, just don't do that celebration, right? Like, you got in trouble for playing with guns. And if I'm his teammate, I'm like, dude, why are you inviting more stuff to come in here? Like, why are you putting yourself above the team in this sense where you can't stay healthy, you get in trouble, and you're clearly wanting it to be your success over your team's success because you're getting pissed off when the team starts doing well, but you start playing poorly. And you're having, at that time, he had career lows, I believe, in touches, and some other metrics. So he was getting pissed about that. But it's like, I don't know. I kind of want my number one guy to be willing to give things up for the betterment of the team. And this is a team that has title aspirations. Is that fair, right? Like, they want to
Yeah.
win. That's their goal. And I think they can win the title. And now you just took like three or four steps back, in my opinion.
Yeah. Scal was like, when he did that celebration, he was like, huh, I wonder what that was. Was that a telescope, maybe? It was, I saw this tweet. Games played since 2023. Zion Williamson, 129. Brandon Ingram, 127. Ja Morant, 114. So it's like he's right there. I hate to like blame guys for injuries, but it is a part of the game. Like, we need our best player to be
Some of those weren't
available.
injuries.
What's that?
Some of those missed games for
That's
Jaw weren't
true.
injuries.
That's very true. Yeah.
So, and yeah, not to cut you off, but I mean, like, some of those games weren't injuries. And I mean, the ones that he does have injuries, like, clearly it's lingering because he doesn't play consistently. Like, look, I'm gonna go through his
Well, you
game
never know if
logs.
he's playing when you turn on
Yeah.
Memphis. You just don't know. But
And
I've also seen the other side of this where it's like, this 4 year kind of run of the Grizzlies where it's like, oh, they're this really fun up and coming team. And then it's the next year, it's like, oh, maybe they can make some noise in the playoffs this year. And then Oh man, it was just a year from hell. Everybody got injured. And then this year, they're the fifth seed, and it's like, blow it up, fire the coach, trade Ja. And I see that part too, where it's like, maybe it is a little bit of an overreaction. Like, maybe this is just the natural course in the NBA for young, talented teams like this. I think people maybe kind of speed up the timeline of teams when they're really good when they're really young. And I think maybe we're doing a little bit of that, but it's also like, you got to show us some signs here that you're moving in the right direction, and they're not.
Well, they've also kept cutting off crust, and you keep cutting crust off a sandwich, eventually you run out of fucking sandwich. It becomes all crust, right? And Dillon Brooks was the first piece, right? They're like, all right, well, Dillon Brooks shot a million shots. He's talking a lot of shit. He's our scapegoat. Get rid of him. Okay, we're gonna bring a mentor in Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose. Okay, those guys don't work out. Get rid of them. Like, they're constantly tinkering. They're constantly like bringing in new guys and things like that. And it's if it's like kind of rotten at the core, then I mean, everything else is like not going to be that great, but like you said, it's a good point. It's year four, trying to figure a thing out. Like, clearly teams need to play and get all this stuff in, but I mean, all that other stuff makes it a lot harder for me to trust him as a number one option and be this face of your team. And not to mention, he's just like ridiculously undersized. He's 6'1". Like,
You
how
can't
many?
shoot at 6'2", you're gonna struggle. Sorry.
Yeah, and I mean, how many? Like, we're. If you're looking, if you're naming like under 6'3", number one options, it's like Brunson and who else? Like, I
Yeah, I mean, like Steph is always the go-to for small guards, but he is like a full 6'3",
yeah, he's like a
so.
legit 6'3", and he's fucking bulky. Like, Jaw's still really skinny,
Yeah.
and he plays differently, and he shoots the ball. That's Steph's thing. He moves off ball and he shoots the ball, and he's the least unself or he's the most unselfish player and teammate probably ever. And
Yeah.
Jaw clearly has problems with that. So, I mean, I think this is going to be like a really interesting summer. Now, I think you haven't really had the opportunity to get an adult in the room. Like, you got Marcus Smart in there. I wouldn't say that he's the greatest. I mean, looks pretty good for the Wizards right now, but it's only been a couple of games. I wouldn't say he's the greatest, like, mentor because, I mean, we saw with Boston, he had some troubles with that. And I love Marcus, so I'm not trying to, like, talk shit about him,
I think
but
he would be a great off-court mentor, like
yeah,
teammate. I think on court,
on
like
court.
in terms of the shot selection and stuff and the turnovers, I
Absolutely.
don't know
And
if
he
he can
was also
really
hurt.
help
And he was
with
also hurt for
learning
a
the
while.
game. Yeah.
But I think, like, you're getting an adult in the room. That's interesting. Like, if you got someone that's like a legit adult kind of star, I wonder, A, if it works, and B, if that guy takes touches from Morant, what happens then? And also, what if Jaren overshadows Ja? Is Ja gonna have a problem with that now?
Well, he
Like,
kind of already did. I
that's
mean,
what I'm saying.
that's what
Yeah.
happened this whole year.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And Jaw had issues. And it's like, well, that's because of the style of play. But it's like, well, what if Jaren Jackson Jr. is just a better option? And
Yeah.
now you start running more offense through him. It's like, is Jaw going to be pissy about this? Because clearly there's already been an issue with the stats going down, and he doesn't really care about winning, right? So, like, this is potential, man, to be something super interesting. I heard an NBA exec say, watch out for it to be like the De'Aaron Fox situation, where you're just kind of like, the both sides kind of outgrew each other and they just move on. Like, I don't think De'Aaron Fox has the pull in Sacramento that Ja has in the state of Tennessee alone. Like, I lived in Tennessee the year Ja was drafted up until like 2023. And I can tell you, I lived in East Tennessee, which is about as far away from Memphis as you can get in the state. And the pull that he had in Eastern Tennessee was ridiculous. And I've heard a lot of people that are from West Tennessee and from the Memphis area. He is the biggest athlete in that area by far. So clearly, like, as a smaller market team, it's easy for us to sit here and be like, trade job, but there for them, it's like, this guy drives a ton of our economy as a basketball team. So I think it's harder for that because he's such a big star in the state. But I mean, there's gonna be some tough questions and conversations, I think, coming up,
Oh yeah, big time. And
especially if they fizzle out in the playoffs.
yeah, I was just gonna say, like, this is such a gauntlet, and such a tough year. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, are we really gonna kill Memphis for being the fifth seed in this West? But I don't know. All the Jaw stuff about like his touches. What was it? It was like his dribbles per touch, his time holding the ball per touch, and just his touches per game are all the lowest of his career, and he was upset about it. And
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you shouldn't be upset if the team is winning. That's really the bottom line.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard to learn the flow of an offense when you don't play and get into the
That's
flow of a new offense.
completely fair. Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of tough
They should
questions
run it
come
through
up.
Santi, honestly. They should just give him the
I
keys.
don't know if Bane would love that, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just Taylor Jenkins, by the way, just an elite, like, just a great, some team is going to add him as maybe an assistant for like a year
Yeah.
until a better opportunity opens up. 'Cause like the only other job is the Kings job. And if I'm him, I'm like, I'm probably not going to take that job. But, you know, if he just joins the bench somewhere and for a year waits for like another interesting job to open up and just hops in, like why
Yeah,
not?
he's automatically like number one coach on the market.
Seriously. So, yeah, it's just I don't even I yeah, the coach scapegoat thing is really real. It really is. And I get it. Like the first thing you move is the coach, and it makes sense because like we said,
You
Jaw
don't do it
is
nine games before the playoffs, though, I
no,
feel
you
like.
don't. You do not do
But
that. I don't know what they're thinking and what I'm honestly interested. Apparently, I don't know much about the Finnish coach, but apparently he's a very good coach, very well liked, very well known within the organization. Interested in seeing if he ends up just sticking out and being the coach in the long term, or if they go and get someone else. And there's going to be some interesting names on the market for sure. So I can't wait to see how that works out. I think it's going to be a fun summer. I think it's going to be a very productive summer because there's some teams that are going to lose earlier than they thought in the playoffs, especially in the West. And I
yeah.
think you're going to see some people panic trade. And there might be some big names available, like Ja Morant or Giannis or KD. So fun offseason here. Anything else you had, Jordan? Or I think we're good, right?
I'm good. It's good lasagna. Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah. Appreciate that. All right, that has been our NBA potluck. We will be back next week. Stay tuned. We're gonna start ramping up more pods, especially as the playoffs start heading our way. I think we're gonna try and do what we normally do, which is like a reaction after all the game ones and twos and all that stuff. It's gonna be a little bit more reactionary pods. The pod this upcoming week will be on Sunday. Will be in preparation for these playoffs, I believe. So we're gonna be doing some fun stuff in that end. But yeah, just this is the time where we really take off. We got playoffs, then we got right into the draft, into free agency. We'll be covering it all here on the couch. Check out Jordan, all of his stuff that's going on. You can check the link tree that's in the description of every bio. Check us out on YouTube if you want to see how beautiful we are. We're on YouTube. Look up the couch JD. It's not the thing about JD Vance fucking a couch. It is something different. It's a sports podcast. I know
It's
that
just my
comes up.
face.
It's just Jordan's face, but that does come up every time. Get us on Instagram, TikTok, anywhere you can watch or listen to podcasts, Spotify. Please, if you're on YouTube, subscribe and leave us a thumbs up and a comment. If you're on Spotify, please, or Apple Music or wherever you get this podcast, please give us five stars, and hit the follow button to get notified when we post. We love you all. We thank you all for listening. Can't wait to be back on Sunday, and peace.